Hey, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 11 of Find Your Favorite Place. My name is Billy McOwen. I'm your host. I am joined today by Mr. Dan Cecil. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Billy. How are you?
All right, good. Dan is fresh off the buyer experience here with Mossy Oak Properties, Land and Farms Realty, and, you know, he's been a kind and gentle a participant in this in these podcasts, because actually we've been talking quite a bit about Dan's purchase here over the course of the last several weeks. Dan has recently purchased about 272 acres out there in Terrell County, and actually that property has been the subject of quite a few of our more recent podcasts, in particular the podcast we had out there talking about the CREP programs and all of those types of things. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what the buyer experience is like, and the good, the bad, the ugly, the questions, the uncertainties, the experience of coming and looking at the properties, and what it was like, you know, having to deal with this kind of from a Dan, you're not from this area, are you?
I'm not. I'm from Columbus, Ohio.
From Columbus, Ohio. And what do you do for a living?
Oh, I'm an attorney.
Okay, so Dan's an attorney. Needless to say, as such, he's quite a detail-oriented guy, and you know, was really great to work with, because he's, you know, one of the buyers that has a million questions, which is great, because you get a chance to really cover all your bells and whistles and all the details and dot your I's and cross your T's as you're going through them, you know, this buyer process. So When did we first meet? How long ago was that when we first kind of got together and started talking about this?
I want to say it was probably, we started talking about mid-July, and I think I came down here end of July, maybe early August for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're about 10 hours away, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's a pretty good little clip. So when we first started talking, I remember like it was yesterday, because I had another client I was working with, and we were out looking at a big 611 acre tract in the Pasquotank River over in Pasquotank County, just north of Elizabeth City. He came out here, stayed the weekend with his wife. I picked him up. We went out there. We looked at this property, and I'm circling back through to show him what was the 220 acre Tessonier tract that you ended up buying. And only when I was sitting there and I realized that right next to it was one of my colleagues had the property in front there for sale, the Davis track, I was like, oh my God, you know, we can combine these two tracks together, and he could peel a piece of this Davis track off as a qualifier for the farmland and enroll every bit of the Tessonier track into this CREP program. And it went off in my head at that moment like a light bulb. And I get home, and then I think you and I talked like a couple of days later. And I think you called me about the Tessonier track initially, right?
Didn't Correct.
You? The 220 acres. So, you know, what were you, I know I probably launched off into this, you know, 30, 40 minute diatribe on all the stuff that you could do. But what was your initial impression about what we were talking about there with these conservation easements and the possibilities and the money and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I don't, I practice law, but I don't do anything with property. So this was all new to me. And so when I called up, my first impression was, you know, you were talking about a lot of programs that I had no familiarity with. And so I listened, but you know, your enthusiasm, I think, was contagious. You know, when you were talking about the way to structure this and the way to put it into the program and the financial return and things like that, you know, at the end of the conversation, I mean, I still remember that conversation like it was yesterday, because I was walking up and down my patio at home, and I was talking on the phone. It was a nice night. And then as soon as we were off the phone, I was talking to my wife, and we were doing research right away. But I mean, my first impression was this has to be too good to be true.
It does. I mean, when you start talking about actually being able to use these program monies and can actually pay for property in full, you know, over the course of the lifetime of this, you know, the life cycle of this program. Oh, heck yeah, man. I mean, and that's, you know, that's part of it. That's one of the bigger challenges for me is I tell people about these things, but it's like, yeah, that's great. But you kind of ran with it a little bit. I was happy, you know, when you started getting fired up about it, because I was like, wow, man, holy cow, this guy gets it, you know?
Well, and you know, the other part of it was it's a lot of land, and obviously you don't need that much land for a homestead, but you can still use the land for what you want, which is, you know, I like the outdoor, hunting, fishing, everything like that. And so, you know, my other reaction was, well, why would I want to buy land and then turn it over to the state? And then, you know, the more you investigate, the more you find out that pretty much the things that you want to do on the land, you still can. You know, you just can't develop it if that's what you want to do. And so that was the next question. I kept looking throughout the process. There's got to be something.
There's got to be a catch,
yeah,
right?
I kept thinking, and I even told my wife at one point, I said, you know, throughout this process, you know, when you're going into a big purchase like this, you're getting nervous. And I keep thinking something's going to happen and it's going to fall through. And in some ways you might be relieved because, you know, it's sometimes that's the easiest path.
Right. But, it's like, I knew it. Yeah. I knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah. And everything that I did, though, every time I would go back and do the research and I'd find out that in some cases it even turned out better. When we looked at the survey, for example, I was worried about having to pay a lot of money for a survey and you know, finding out that the CREP program actually pays for the survey was another
thing. Oh, man, that's huge.
Yeah, and so I think that was probably the tipping point for me when you found out that and you passed that information on to me. I said, I want to come down and see the land.
Yeah. And let's talk about that. You know, what was that like? You know, we met out there, you came in, like late July, August? What was that? I mean, the bugs were,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. So we were like dressed in ghillie suits, you know, going out there and looking around this place. So, you know, what were you left with, you know, going out? We went out, we investigated the property. I think you had gone out the night before and kind of sat across the street in the driveway of the neighbor and just sort of, you know, got an idea about it. So, you know, what were you thinking? You know, because land is one of those purchases where it's not utilitarian like a house. Like, okay, that's an adequate kitchen. That's an adequate bathroom. These are adequate bedrooms. Land kind of speaks to your heart. What was going on in your heart when you were first looking at that piece of property?
Well, you're right. I came down on a Friday night and we were going to meet on a Saturday, but I couldn't wait. So yeah. I came out here on a Friday night and then we were going to meet at 9 a.m. and I got there at 7 a.m. And so I was walking around. But I think when I saw the river, that's what spoke to me.
Oh, yeah.
Is the river there is just beautiful. It's pristine, you know, and then the farmland is also really nice because it, you know, there's different opportunities with the farmland. And then, you know, just the other part of it, which is a great habitat for everything. And we saw some turkey feathers. Well, I saw turkey that morning and then saw some turkey feathers and things. So,
you know, you remember the quail?
I do.
You know, and we were talking, Andrew and I were talking about that last night. And it was an odd circumstance because we had actually had a buyer for the Davis farm at one point prior to. And he wanted to put a pecan orchard out there. And then we were bumping up against some stuff with the FSA and the payment program that was coming as part of the FSA. He wanted to be able to harvest his pecans. And, you know, it was on the fringe of whether or not it was allowable. And so, you know, he wasn't able to use, you know, the property, you know, for that. And there were some other concerns about, of course, there was county water and other things like that out there. But, you know, he was looking at a pretty substantial amount of money to install a well and some other things like that. So as we were in the middle of that, we pulled off of farming it. We didn't farm it, you know, for this year. So it had gone, you know, it had started to go back into some of its natural grasses. And of course, the ditch banks were growing up and everything like that. And I remember you and me were walking around and we're listening to the Bob White sing. And then we're sitting over there in the truck, you know, at the end of the day talking, and we're watching the quail in coveys, you know, fly from ditch bank to ditch bank. And I thought, wow, you know, there's a great example of just kind of just leaving, letting the land kind of get back to what it was. And then all of a sudden, you know, here's all this quail and everything around over there when you just hardly ever see that, you know, anymore. But yeah, it was really great for me to see that too. But, you know, so what do we do next? And I think we went down and to the river and didn't we take the drone up and fly the drone and do some other stuff? What else did we do?
We did. I wanted to see how wide the canals were, or the ditches, because you know, this property has two ditches on it that go all the way up to the farmland, and so you were kind enough to bring your drone. And so we were able to check out the ditches, because it was, you know, without a boat, there's no way to get to them.
Right.
And so we were able to catch part of that and see those.
Yeah. And then I remember we walked, it was a little section of woods land up there to the north side. It had some good looking pines on it. And we were able to get over there and walk around and do some stuff. And I think we were there for a couple, 3 hours, and, you know, seemed to, you know, when we walked away from that, I felt like, okay, this guy really likes this place. He feels, you know, I was, you know, were you starting to kind of, you know, feel it in your heart of hearts that this was maybe something that was worth investigating even a little bit further?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, and I had a 10-hour drive on my way home to think about it. And so, you know, by the time I got home, I was so excited. I think, you know, all I could do is, I came home and just started talking to my wife the whole time. Yeah.
And what was your wife thinking about all this? Is she thinking this guy's out of his mind? He's listening to this local yokel named Billy, and what's he telling my husband? And oh my gosh, what's going on? I mean, did you have to twist her arm into this, or was it something that, you know? I mean, she's a beekeeper, right? She likes the outdoors and she enjoys these things. And so, just was this an easy sell for mama or a hard sell for mama?
It was actually an easy sell. We both share kind of a love for the outdoors. And yeah, you're right, she's a beekeeper. But, you know, just the hiking and the we've had kayaks in the past and do a lot of water sports and things. So, yeah. And she knows me well enough to know that, you know, when I see something like this, pretty enthusiastic, to say the least. And she unfortunately couldn't go with me to see the land because she was still recovering from a shoulder surgery. Otherwise, I think she would have went with me. But, you know, we joked a lot of times about, you know, how we bought swampland and, you know, and we call it wetlands and everything. But it really is a beautiful property. And now that she's down here, I think she would agree.
Well, good. So you guys are down. Yeah, we closed last week. You guys are down here now. You brought your folks with you. You're staying out in Columbia and have gone and investigated all over the property and had a lot of fun. And we're really glad to have you come over here and talk about this experience and everything on the podcast. So let's dig in a little bit deeper into, you know, some of the process on this, you know, and you know, we had about a 45-day due diligence period in which to go through that. So what did that due diligence look like? Was everything that we had talked about that you would have to go through and all of the, you know, the sort of the gauntlet that you have to, you know, kind of walk through, because we're on a schedule here, right? I mean, you had 1031 exchange money. So why don't we talk about that for a second? We'll just, if you don't mind, you know, just to kind of, how did that work? So you had a rental company, a rental property, and then you sold it and you said, okay, I want a 1031 exchange this money. And what was that process like? Did you have to go find a 1031 agent? How did that work? Talk about that for a second.
Okay. So for those who don't know, 1031 is a reference to the Internal Revenue Code. And so basically a 1031 exchange is when you take an investment property, you sell it, and then you roll the proceeds into another investment property in order to avoid the taxes.
Okay.
Avoid them in a legal way, of course.
Yes.
And but the rules are really strict. So they're very technical. And I had never been involved in anything like this. My wife actually is the tax expert in the family, so she did most of the research. And so what we did is we took that money from our rental house, which it was just a normal house, and this was a great time to sell. So we sold the house, and then we have 45 days to identify the property and 180 days from the date of the sale to actually close on it. So we were, you know, the 180 days gave us plenty of time, but we had to have something identified within 45 days. And so immediately after we sold the property, I started doing the research. And we did do, there's ways that probably, well, I don't know. I don't think you could probably do it on your own. You probably do have to have a 1031 exchange agent. So when we closed on our other property, all the proceeds go to the 1031 exchange agent because you're not allowed to touch the money. And then, you know, once we've identified the property, then we got help with that from the law firm. Jay Wheelis helped me with the identifying the or sending the identification to the company. And we identified these two properties as our potential purchases. And then once we close, then the 1031 agent just basically transfers the funds from the proceeds of the sale of the other house to the closing agent. And then we just put down the rest of the money.
Yeah. And you got a loan for this, right?
We did, yeah.
Okay, so who did you use to get the loan with?
Well, we used Southern Bank.
Okay, yep. So Neil, who was on one of our previous podcasts, and as a matter of fact, you know, we probably mentioned, you know, what we were doing with you, with Neil on that podcast. What was that experience like working with Southern Bank?
It was great. You know, you had referred me to Neil, but I still called around to a couple banks because I want to make sure that, you know, I get the best deal and I want to understand the process and everything. And it didn't take me long before I realized that they really were the best game in town. They knew this process. They knew, I mean, you know, I bought and sold a couple of houses and buying land was a lot different. Mm-hmm. So the loan terms are a lot different. You know, the fees that you pay are different. And so after I called around a little bit, I was very comfortable with using Southern Bank. And they were great throughout the process. When I had a question, I could call them up and I would talk to Neil.
And that personal touch, that's everything. You know, you're not getting some low-level mock-a-dolly over there that you're just a number. Who are you again? You know, you can actually connect with a VP or, you know, a branch manager over there, and you feel like that, you know, you mean something to them. And that's a lot. You know, I feel that because, you know, I always want to refer a buyer over to, you know, anybody, be that a surveyor, be that a forester, be that a banker. You know, anybody that can do any sort of vending or work or support for this, you want to make sure, because I always felt like that's sort of an extension of your own, you know, customer service model. You want to make sure that your people are being taken care of. And you felt that way with Southern Bank. You felt like they had your back and they were going to do the things that you needed, you know, to have done to make this thing work. Any hiccups there at all with those guys? No?
No, I think that one of your previous podcasts mentioned, I think it was one of the first ones. And by the way, I listened to your podcast right after I finished the process for myself. So it was like, I was always one podcast behind. But so if anybody's, I would have, definitely the podcast helped a lot.
Okay.
But one of the podcasts, I think, mentioned that a lot of buyers going into this process really don't appreciate the fact that you have to put down a lot more for a land purchase. And I think that was great advice, because I think, you know, coming up with a budget from the very beginning and knowing how much you have to put down, I think will reduce the shock. I was in a little bit of shock when I found out that, you know, 30% is required. But, you know, we obviously were able to still close on the purchase.
Yeah. And you had some resources through the 1031 process that, you know, that helped out with that and everything. So, you know, so we sort of got that started. We got that going. We hooked up with Jay, and let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, here it is. We're combining two pieces of property. You know, one of them is a 220-acre, you know, tract of land. We didn't get a survey done. We are getting one done. But, you know, Jay helped to do, Jay Wheelis from Wheelis & Wheelis, you know, helped us with being able to put in a really good property description in the deed and allowed for that. Now, later, you know, what's great is later, you know, when you do get the survey done from the folks with the CREP program, you can then go back to Jay and say, hey, I need you to record this, you know, to go along with this and maybe make some adaptations to the deed to reference that as, you know, your land and everything. And but, you know, he was able to go. He's like, yeah, I know that land. I happen to hunt like literally right across the street from that, which I thought was, you know, really great. So we're able to. In that moment, being able to save, you know, who knows how much that survey would cost if you had to go and do that. I mean, $25,000, $30,000, it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But Jay was able to, because he had local knowledge of the property, he had already done some of the cursory title work, was able to adapt and do a meets and bounds property description adequate enough to provide for the deed, to get the loan and do all of that kind of stuff. So, man, that was really great. So there's a really great example of two you know, primary vendors that we use all the time, Wheelis & Wheelis, as well as Southern Bank, and really getting the job done for you too. So the big question mark, of course, is, and with everybody, is like, wow, is this CREP program really going to work for me? I mean, is this, they're talking about a lot of money that I can get, you know, as part of this program. You know, did that make you nervous? I mean, were you, you know, just sort of wondering, like, am I really actually going to be able to get this money, or is this, are these guys just pulling my leg?
That was probably the part that I was most nervous about throughout the whole process, because that was the primary driver behind buying both tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that that's where, first of all, the conversation with Kent really helped a lot, because, again, talking directly to the administrator of the program, I think gave me a lot of assurances. But even with those conversations, the program still involves a delay. So I think, as one of your podcasts also indicated, it's a one-year waiting period from the time you purchase the property to the time that you can actually apply for the program. And so, you know, in, especially in these times, things are changing all the time. And so there is, I was nervous. I'm still a little nervous because, you know, you just don't know how things are going to go in the future. But again, given the success of the program and the goals of the program, I feel pretty good about the fact that 1 year, 366 days after Friday, that I'm going to hopefully walk into the office with my completed application after having done all the research and due diligence and a lot of the prep work and the conversations with the CREP program administrators. I'm fairly confident that everything will go smoothly.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that Ken had mentioned, because that was one of the big questions that I asked Ken about all this stuff, was, you know, hey, you know, is there going to be monies available? And like he indicated, he said the primary resource that comes in for the lump sum payments is coming in from the Clean Water Trust Fund. And they've, you know, that program is funded. I think he said, you know, for about the next 4 years. And then, of course, the individual yearly stipends come from FSA, which is, you know, part of the Farm Bill. Those are smaller in comparison to, you know, what you would be receiving in the lump sum. But that lump sum payment coming in, I mean, buddy, you know, that's a pretty good chunk of dough, Ray-Me, coming in. $255, you know, that's a big, big chunk of dough. You know, and you know, I told you, I looked at that property and I was like thinking, boy, if this guy doesn't get it, I need to jump on it. I'd done the math, you know, and knew what the carrying cost would have been, you know, for a year. But when you start thinking about, like, holy cow, I can actually enroll this, and literally over the course of that, of the lump sum payment and everything, and then the 15-year, you know, yearly, you know, stipends that I get for the next 15 years, totally and completely pay for this property, 100/100, and have a beautiful place. And so I take 23 acres out of farm production, planted in trees, and enjoy the rest of it and have it, you know, conserved in perpetuity. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, who in the world would not want to, you know, consider that? And I think that, you know, one of the other things that we had talked about was, you know, all these usage models, like, you know, like being able to, what can I actually do? Well, you know, pretty much everything you wanted to, right? I mean, was there anything that you're not able to do with this land now that you originally wanted to do? Is there anything, do you feel like there's any restriction at all on you at all?
No. And one of the other benefits to this is, you know, they also help us with the land management plan, the tree planting plan. And in the end, I think what we're going to end up with is a beautiful property, which we've had a lot of help and a lot of work. You know, the state has really assisted us throughout this. And we'll have probably 30 acres that we can use for what we want that won't be restricted. And then the rest of it, we do what we want with what we were planning on doing with anyway, which is just the outdoor recreational type of thing. So, no, I can't think of anything that that I would ever want to. It's not the type of land that you'd ever develop. You know, and so, you know, putting it into the CREP program is almost a no-brainer for us.
Yeah. And so in dealing with all of that, like from a distance, you know, like not living in this area, you know, having a regular full-time job that is, you know, I mean, you have a, you know, a big job, you know, what you do. And did you find that it was taxing to get all these questions answered and anything? Did you feel like that, you know, that working with us and working with these vendors that we're, you know, hooking you up with, was that a struggle or was that an easy thing for you to do?
It was time consuming and a blast. I had so much fun, you know, talking to everybody and trying to work out the details and trying to figure out, you know, how this is going to work. And I think you were the one who turned me on to MapRite. And we would, my wife and I would sit there on the computer and figure out, well, if we put this part in the program, and what will we, where will we put a house and a barn? And we really had a lot of fun planning it. And, you know, I just, it was very interesting to me. I mean, the whole CREP program is really interesting.
It is. And, you know, and I'm glad you said what you just said, which is it was time consuming and a blast. You know, things worth doing aren't always easy, and they do take effort. And a lot of people, you know, they might not want to do that, but there are some benefits. Do you feel like that you got the benefits from it? For, I mean, in other words, you know, is there a payoff for all the hard work you put in?
It would be hard for me to understate the benefit that I see us getting out of this.
Okay.
I mean, it is it's a beautiful property. We plan on moving down here, you know, sometime in within the next 3 to 5 years. And even in the meantime, it's a great place to come down and visit and work. I mean, even though land is, you know, you can consider it work, but if you're having so much fun, it doesn't really feel like work. And
yeah.
So, you know, I can't imagine anything that was as close to perfect as the way this turned out.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so what's next? You know, so now you've got the land purchased, and I think, you know, one of the things that Kent had mentioned was is that, you know, now it's time to, you know, go ahead and get started doing some of the cursory work, which is, have you had an opportunity to speak? I think you had talked to a logger about going in and maybe harvesting some of the timber there in it, in because if you're going to do that, now's the time, obviously, to do it, right? So tell me about that. You know, what was it easy to be able to find somebody that was willing to go in there and do that? What was that like?
Well, that part of it was a little bit difficult,
yeah.
Only because, not because, you know, that the people were difficult to work with, but the land itself, you know,
yeah,
a lot of it is
challenges. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it has some challenges for the timber. And we kind of go back and forth because it's a, you know, some of the trees are just beautiful on the property.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you almost hate to harvest them. But on the other hand, you know, for hunting and a lot of other recreation, it's kind of nice to have a little bit more open area. So we're kind of leaning toward that. But so far, there's not a lot of loggers in Terrell County, and so the number is just limited. But we have been working with both a consultant and reaching out to some timber companies on our own, and I think that we're moving along with a little bit.
Okay, yeah. But do you feel confident that, you know? And I mean, with logging, it's a lot of timing, of course, in eastern North Carolina. You know, it can be. We're getting ready to get into what we would. And we were talking about this yesterday. You know, it's the rainy season, right? Mm-hmm. We're in hurricane slot. You know, from now until mid-October, you know, we're in that hurricane slot, and, you know, there's a higher potential for, you know, tropical events, you know, coming through, which of course, you know, makes it, you know, significantly more difficult to get in and do logging and other stuff like that. So, but you feel that, you know, you'll have plenty of time to be able to achieve those goals in advance of, you know, this day 366. Right. When you show up over there with your application in hand. So, but you have identified a consulting forester that can, you know, help you with this. Is that right?
Yeah. And okay. One of the reasons I think I'm fairly confident is because you turned me on to this even before we closed. So we just closed on Friday, but I've been working on finding timber companies for weeks now. So I think that we'll probably be okay.
Yeah. Okay, good. And then I think, you know, one of the things also too that Kent had talked about was is that you're going to get to select, you know, the type of trees that, you know, we're going to plant, you know, here. And how many acres are you going to enroll the full 23 acres of the farm?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay.
Yep.
So you got 23 acres of trees that you're going to plant on this. And now have you and your wife sat down and sort of with a MapRite map and gone and taken that farmland and sort of carved out or drawn out, you know, sort of a little, you know, island, if you will, of trees where you're going to put them? How are you going to do that?
Well, we kicked around a lot of different ideas for how to configure it, and ultimately we went with your original suggestion, which
going along the road.
Yep, built along the road, and with primarily oak. I think that's what Kent said would probably be the most appropriate there. but some type of oak tree all along the road, and then having a path in and a path out on the edges of the property.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, I mean, what a beautiful place, right?
Right. Are you gonna dig an impoundment? Are you gonna put an impoundment in?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are pretty excited about this.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Well, good. Yeah. So then part of the plan is you've got 40 acres of farmland that you've got to work with, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to take 23 acres of it and basically form what would be a barrier along the road, Newfoundland Road there, and create this buffer of oak trees as part of the CREP plantings. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of them, sandwiched between those plantings and the Tessenier track, you're going to put in an impoundment. How big of an impoundment are you going to? You're going to put in?
That we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the whole concept.
10 acres, 5 acres? What are you kicking around?
Probably 5 to 10.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And so you're going to build that then, and that'll still leave you with about 12 acres of, and so are you thinking food plots, little, I mean, you got all kinds of stuff that you can do. There's a, you know, I don't know if you, did you see all the turkeys that live over there? I mean, you know, a little spot, a little chufa here, a little food mm-hmm. plots. I think, you know, you can, of course, you got to have a, you know, probably a little half acre put aside for the bees.
Right.
Right. So there's going to be that going on over there. That'll be kind of fun. Are you going to build on this? You going to put a house up?
We are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So where are you going to put that? Are you going to go down in the southern section over there by the woods? Or where are you thinking?
We were out there yesterday,
yeah.
Actually, just you know, exploring a little bit of the land because it, you know, as you can imagine, it takes a while to see all of the 272, and we've probably seen maybe 30. And the northern end of it is a little bit drier, and so we're kind of looking at that. And there is a house. We have no idea how old it is. It has to be 80 to 100 years old. It's all fallen down.
Oh yeah, yeah, and, yeah. The one that's over there in that grove of trees.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, yeah. And, no joke.
Yeah. And so we looked at that too. So it's going to be one end or the other, and so that we can separate the impoundment and the deer plots and all the other things that we want to do. So we want to keep the house away from it.
Yeah.
And so we haven't quite nailed it down yet. But again, that's all part of the fun.
Yeah. Do you feel like that you've got a good enough grasp that all of this can get managed, you know, from a distance? I think that's a lot of fear that people have. It's like, you know, holy cow, I'm biting off this big project. You know, how am I going to manage this, you know, from afar? How has managing this project been for you from a distance? And how do you see that moving forward? You know, now that you've closed and you've got, you know, another, 362 days to kind of get going, you know, on it. So how are you feeling about, you know, project management on something like this over the next year?
Well, you know, there are some disadvantages to being a little further away, but most of the work that we're going to be doing is paperwork. You know, just making sure that we meet all the qualifications for the CREP program or reaching out to people. And I do expect to make a couple of trips down here, but I have to be honest, you know, it is a bit of a drive, but I get excited every time I come down.
Yeah.
And just to be able to play around on the land and to do some things. But I think for the most part, over the next year, most of it won't involve actually physically being here, that I'll be just as efficient getting it done up there. I think that the only disadvantage is as part of once the trees are planted, which is probably still a year and a half away, you have to mow around them.
Yeah.
But and so basically, I'll just have to find somebody. I'd love to do it myself. My dad would probably love to do it. He really likes it down here. But in the end, that's probably the only real requirement that you can't do from afar.
Yeah.
Everything else has worked out just fine.
Yeah. Well, those types of you know, low level maintenance things are certainly stuff that we can. I mean, there are people here, you know, that can help with that, and you know, have tractors and mowers and other stuff like that. You just don't want to mow in trees. You know, mow between the trees and stuff.
Right.
So, all right. So, you know, here you are. You've made your purchase. You know, give me an idea. If you had to offer some advice to somebody like yourself that was thinking about, you know, getting involved in doing something like this, and they're out of state and they're thinking, you know, hey, I'd really like to be in the Carolinas. I'd really like to be in the Virginia area or South Carolina, you know, area and get out of the frozen tundra of the north. You know, what is some advice that you can give them? You know, talk about your experience, in working with Mossy Oak Properties and what kind of advice you would give a buyer like yourself, you know, moving forward.
Okay. So again, I think that just becoming familiar with the price of land, is probably the first step. Well, the first step is knowing that you have to put 30% down, or it's likely that you have to put 30% down.
If you're getting a loan.
Right. If you're getting a loan, then back into what you can afford and try to stay within that range. And then what I did is I just kept looking at the internet, looking at LandWatch was, again, the primary site that I used, and just becoming familiar with the prices, because the price of land varies widely depending on where it is.
It varies a heaping pile from what it is in Ohio. Holy moly.
Right.
You know,
my
colleagues up there are selling stuff at twice the amount of money that we are down here. I mean, God love them. But, you got overs and unders in Ohio, too. I mean, you know, that's one of the things, you know, my buddy up there that has an office right, I mean, he's right in Pickerington. Mm-hmm. Brian Bauer and his folks, you know, he sells uppers and lowers. You know, he sells mineral rights and surface rights.
Right.
But it's a big difference. What mm-hmm. did you think about the land prices here in Carolina? Were you surprised
to know that
it was so affordable?
Yeah. Yep. And close, you know, the land we bought, as you know, is about 45 minutes from the Outer Banks. So, you know, another really attractive part about what we ended up with is that we have the seclusion that we want. We have a place that we can really work with. But then we also have the recreational opportunities come with the ocean and the Outer Banks. So,
yeah, you're going to fall in love with that, man. You know,
I'm already there.
Yeah, right. You know, little beach fishing, you know, get mama with a book. You know, with her toes dug in the sand. Yeah, that's pretty tough. That's good. But so what else? What other advice can you offer to folks, you know, looking?
Well, and that was the part, the second part of it is once I kind of identified it, I mean, I was really lucky that I made that call the first day, because, you know, in buying and selling houses, you know, I've worked with a variety of real estate agents, and often it's, they show you the house and they come to the closing. And as you know, I peppered you with questions. I would imagine that there were times when you would look at your phone and go, oh no, it's him again.
Look, it was, I tell you what really made me excited about it is that I knew you were serious. You were asking all the right questions. You know, you weren't kicking tires. These were really good questions. They were real. They were pertinent. They were important to the process. And I knew I had a guy that was serious and wasn't going to waste my time. So, you know, I was in with both feet, because I was like, okay, great, man. This guy's really, he's actually really fired up about this program. He's fired up about this idea, and this is a great opportunity. And I really was, I was really anchored in on making sure that this was going to become a success. It's a great success for our company, a great success for you, great success for the conservation that we want to be so much a part of here with Mossy Oak. Really great with Kent and his team, plus all the ancillary teams that he works with, you know, his partners in the NRCS, the forestry, all of these guys, everybody, including our friends Jay Wheelis at Wheelis and Wheelis, Neil Songer at Southern Bank, all of these guys. There was a lot of good juju that touched a lot of different people. So, you know, when you were asking me all the questions, that got me fired up. I knew that I was working with somebody that was serious, that wanted to make something happen here. And, you know, you're like, even the little things, like over lunch, you know, before we started our podcast, you know, we were talking with your wife. She goes, you know, we want to do something for the county with this land, you know, and you guys are conservation minded. You guys are community oriented. Those are the people that we want to have here. I mean, you know, we want people like you guys around, and, you know, want that community involvement, want that sense of community pride, that sense of giving and all of those things. I mean, that's the fabric of a really good community. That's what makes Eastern North Carolina such a great place to be, is exactly those things. And, you know, so I was really happy. So no, you man, you know, the peppering with all the questions really just told me that you were serious and that I needed to make sure that I stayed on point to make sure that we got this done for you, man. That was, you know, that's the way I saw it anyway.
Well, that, I think that is my advice is don't hesitate to ask questions. This was a new process for me. It's the first time I bought land without a house on it. Bought land in North Carolina, no experience with the CREP program, and throughout it, I just, you know, I would do the research, but I would ask, and we would talk about it. And I think that was really valuable. I think the other part of it is your partnerships are really what made this great too. Again, Wheelis, the law firm, Neil at Southern Bank, you know, all the other people, when we talked about a hunting lease, for example, you said, hey, you know what? I know a guy. I think you said that about 10 times throughout this process. Hey, I know a guy who might be able to help.
Hey, I know a guy.
Yeah. And so you would connect me with somebody. And because it can be somewhat complex, but when you reach out to people who have the expertise that you don't, I think that made a lot of the difference.
So it raised, having those connections and being able to pass those connections around to you, it raised your comfort level. And even from a distance, you're starting to feel connected because you're connecting with the people that we're connected with, that can help you get connected with your purchase and the land and give you a better sense of the community and things that are going on out here. That's good.
And that's why I could do it from Ohio, is because, I didn't need to be here.
Right.
You were here. You knew everybody.
Yeah.
I'd just call up you. I'd call you up and that was what I needed.
Well, good. So your experience, talk a little bit about your experience in working with Mossy Oak. Would you, and be honest, talk about the things that weren't so good and the things that are so good. I mean, were there things that we could have done better?
I can't really think of anything that jumps to mind.
Well,
in all honesty, I think that, I appreciate it first and foremost when I call somebody up and they answer the phone. And that's like the baseline for me. When you're working with somebody, you want to be able to talk to them. Now, a lot of times you might have to say, I'll call you back or something like that, which is completely understandable. But you were accessible. And that made a big difference for me. As far as the process goes, I don't know that, that there was anything that really jumps to mind that I would say, I will say I wish I would have listened to the podcast, or I wish the podcast would have been out available. So I think that the one advantage that people have going forward is a lot of what I asked you about are now embedded in the podcast.
Yes, and you're exactly right. So, and thank you for the shameless plug. So, just for you listeners out there, if you want to learn about these things and learn about these processes and learn about everything that we've been talking about today, it is available. And it's not us, it's not me and our agents out here, talking about all these things. We're bringing in attorneys, we're bringing in bankers, we're bringing in accountants, we're bringing in people that are administering these conservation programs, and you're hearing everything out of the horse's mouth. All of these things are available on Apple Podcasts. If you listen to podcasts, even Google Podcasts or Stitcher or any of those types of things, Spotify even, you can go on there, and the name of the podcast is Find Your Favorite Place. And this is episode, number 11. The 10 other episodes are everything and anything having to do first-time land buyers, first-time loans, conservation easements, the legal side of things, the tax side of things. And today, of course, is the first one that we've been able to have with an actual buyer coming in and talking about his experience of going through this process from a distance, from Ohio, having to do all the research on what is, this was far more than an arm's length transaction, right? We had all kinds of components that were going on with this having to do with the CREP involvement in this and the ability to enroll in that program was pivotal in this. You wouldn't have made this purchase without that being a major player. We'd still be probably looking for you and stuff like that. But,
correct.
I thought it was great the way this thing spun out, and to have you, trust us and trust me in this and all of that. So, is there anything else here? We're kind of getting near the end. Is there anything else that you want to kind of share with our listener public about this process and things that they need to be doing and stuff like that? Something you want to leave us with?
I would say, again, ask a lot of questions, but when you look at these properties, think of the potential. And that was huge for me because I looked at it and I saw the river, and even though I was 10 hours away, I could see all the things that I would just really love to be doing on the land. I mean, land is unique, and there's just nothing like it. And the outdoors are unique. And so, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the process and the paperwork and everything like that, and the programs and things. But, you know, also just look at that land and think of what you could do with it.
Yeah.
And that's, I, you can't imagine how many nights I actually laid awake at night in a good way, because I just couldn't get to sleep because I was thinking about all the fun things that we have in going for us in the future. And, you know, it could be 10 acres, it could be 100 acres, it could be a large tract, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that, you know, we started the process maybe looking for a rental house, and which just I would dread working on. And now we ended up with something that I'm really excited about, the possibility.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, and I do. I see a lot of joy in you guys, and it's just, you know, having lunch with you guys today and meeting your family and spending some time with them and seeing all the joy that you guys are getting from this. It does my heart good, too, because I know it's a job well done. I mean, that's what we want to do. We really strive to connect people with their dreams, and I know it's a big dream of you guys. And you know, here soon, man, you'll be an East Carolinian. You'll be one of the crew, one of the tribe out here. And there's lots of good times, you know, still left to come. So, all right, brother. Well, you know, hey, I think we're kind of getting to the point where we can start wrapping this thing up. And again, thank you so much for coming. And you're here when? When are you going to go back? You're heading back when?
Sunday morning.
So you got one more day down here. And what are your plans? What are you going to do while you're here?
We're going back out tomorrow and doing a little more exploring. Yep, I got my machete and my mosquito net, and we're going out and beating some trails.
All right. Well, good. Well, have a blast. Thanks so much. I think that's pretty much going to do it for episode number 11 of Find Your Favorite Place. My name is Billy McOwen. I'm your host. I was joined today by Mr. Dan Cecil. Dan, thank you so much for coming down and being a part of this, and we really enjoyed having you on the show.
My pleasure.
All right. Peace out, everybody. We'll see you next week.